It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 44 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Carson, we are on the verge of a release of a new Star Wars movie, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
That's it. I'm going rogue. I'm out of here.
He's out. He's getting in line to go see the movie. It releases on December 16th in conjunction with the movie's release. We are seeing two new expansions released on Thursday, December 15th. The Ewing expansion and the TIE Striker expansion.
And the combination of the new film and these brand new ships coming to the X-Wing game has us excited to build some lists with them.
Yeah, so that's what we've been doing. We've been crafting some lists, and we're going to talk about them. So let's get to it. All right, before we get too deep into our discussion of the lists we created, there actually were a couple more cards that were leaked. The new expansions have already been shipping to game stores, so there are some people who have access to these kits, and a couple more of the previously unrevealed cards have been leaked online.
Yeah, through some illicit dealings.
The first of these two cards is a 4-point elite pilot talent called Expertise, and it reads, when attacking, if you are not stressed, you may change all of your focus results to hit results.
Wow, that is quite an elite pilot talent to unpack there. 4 points has usually been a cost that's too expensive to utilize effectively on a ship.
The only other 4-point elite pilot talent cards we have are Expose and Opportunist, both of which don't see really any competitive play.
Well, and that's because they're increasing your die pool, but at a heavy cost. Opportunist is just hard to trigger and costs 4 points. And when you're paying 4 points for an elite pilot talent card, you want it to trigger as often as possible.
Yeah, because you need to justify that expense.
Now, Expose also costs 4 points. That's a hindrance. And it takes up an action, another cost, and you're losing an agility to roll one more attack die. So a lot of things working against it. Expertise has, yes, that cost of 4 points, but a passive modification, and it will trigger every time you roll your attack dice.
Unless you are stressed, of course. But that's, you know, relatively easy to gauge right now whether or not you're going to be stressed when you're attacking. More than likely, you're going to be able to use this ability on most of your attacks, much like when you're able to use Predator on most of your attacks.
I'm not stressed out.
So I would definitely say among these handful of 4-point elite pilot talent cards, clearly this is the best we've seen so far. And even compared to some of the 3-point elite pilot talents, this actually seems like a pretty reasonable value.
Yeah, we should probably compare this to marksmanship because that's the best elite pilot talent card.
It is certainly not the best elite pilot talent card. If it was, we'd see it a little bit more. But marksmanship is a 3-point elite pilot talent that reads, action header, when attacking this round, you may change one of your focus results to a crit result and all of your other focus results to hit results.
So that's a very similar effect to expertise. We're changing focus results to hits. Marksman, you also get a crit result, but costs 1 point less, but uses up an action.
Yeah, and there, I mean, the real reason we don't see a lot of marksmanship is it's for the value. It's really not much better than just taking a focus token. You do gain the advantage of you can change your first focus result into a crit result, but you lose the whole I can spend my focus on defense if I have to. There's a lot of versatility in a focus token. And at 3 points, it's really not worth the value. I'd almost argue at 0 to 1 points, it's not worth the value.
Now, if a ship can take push the limit, that you can get a focus action on top of something else, which is not that different than just having expertise for one attack. Now, push the limit is not a viable option for all ships based off their accessibility to green maneuvers.
Well, and you can't take push the limit and marksmanship on most ships because most ships only have one elite pilot talent, barring the A-Wing.
Right. I'm just saying that extra focus token you would have got from push the limit would be comparable to expertise.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But in situations where expertise becomes better is where you don't have access to that focus action because you're being tied up with other actions, or you're able to get multiple attacks off, triggering that passive ability multiple times. So effects like Gunner allow you to get that focus modification on multiple attacks, trying to get through your defender's tokens by pushing high damage output.
Or even abilities like the TIE D title, which allows you to attack twice in a round if you have a cannon upgrade. The limitation there is that a TIE defender with the TIE D title and this elite pilot talent would get almost prohibitively expensive.
Speaking of expensive defenders, you have Rexler Brath, who is one of the TIE defenders who really hasn't quite made a mark for himself after the TIE X7 and TIE D titles came out, because his pilot ability, pretty hard to trigger, requires having a focus token you don't want to spend. Expertise does help with this. Okay, now you can modify your attack with expertise, get those focus results into hit results, then spend that focus token
to trigger
your action to trigger his ability and turn all the damage into crits.
But again, that's going to be a very expensive tie defender, even with the X7 title.
Yeah, I mean, Rexler's always on the expensive side. It helps a bit.
So a list we came up with that does use, we think, the expertise elite pilot talent to great effect is on a YT-1300. So we were looking at an original trilogy Han Solo. So when attacking, you may reroll all your dice. If you choose to do so, you must reroll as many of your dice as possible. Loaded out with expertise, gunner, C-3PO, Millennium Falcon, and the engine upgrade cart, along with, get this, a cluster missile. And we'll get to that in a second. We pair this up with a Jake Farrell, who's got Veteran Instinct, Proton Rockets, A-Wing Test Pilot to get that second elite pilot talent, Auto Thrusters, and Push the Limit. So a fairly standard Jake build at 33 points.
Yeah, so this is just a slight tweak on that very traditional Han Jake build that we saw make top four at Worlds this year again. The list has traditionally used Predator in that elite pilot talent slot, getting that modification that Han wants with that gunner offense. Okay, you have a passive effect that triggers on both of your attacks.
Gunner, of course, when you miss with an attack, you can immediately take a primary weapon attack.
And Han doesn't get the option to really use focus on offense because he's usually taking an evade token action with the Millennium Falcon title or boosting. Those are basically his two actions. And so all of your modification comes from just rerolling, or if you had a Luke Skywalker crew, you got one focus result on your second shot. With expertise here, you still have Han's pilot ability to reroll dice, and now that expertise modifying your focus results into hits.
Yeah, so the trade-off you're making here compared to the other Han Solo build we've been looking at is you're playing Gunner instead of Luke, so you save 2 points there because you're getting your modification from expertise. You don't have the reroll on Predator, but there is a certain amount of redundancy between Predator and Han Solo's ability already.
Han's pilot ability allows you to reroll all of your attack dice, whereas Predator is usually just one attack dice, maybe two if they're pilot skill two or lower.
And since you already have the Gunner effect, even if you're just generating one hit on that first attack, more often than not, that's fine because you are getting the second attack, and hopefully you've stripped some tokens at that point. Now, Carson, how do we feel about this decision to put a cluster missile on Han Solo?
Well, the issue we ran into was the list traditionally had a 97-point bid, which is fine. Now we had 4 points left over, and like that just seems like too much of a bid for two PS9s right now.
Yeah, right now in the current metagame, a PS9 ship doesn't really need to take a very strong bid because we're seeing a lot of 5s, 6s, and 8s. So just having a 9 seems to be enough right now. What I actually like about putting this missile on here is since you're getting that expertise modification on all your attacks, if you're able to drop 2 attacks on, say, a TIE Defender, which have been pretty hard to hit, that's a good way to push some damage out early on.
And with cluster missiles, the traditional downside is how do I modify both of those attacks? Well, Han has so much passive modification in this build. He's got his passive pilot ability allowing him to reroll all those attack dice. And now with expertise, he can also modify focus results to hits.
And if you miss with both of your cluster missiles attacks, you can still trigger Gunner.
Sure.
The other card that was spoiled from the U-Wing expansion was the unique crew card for 2 points called Bistan. I'm not sure. It's a character from Rogue One.
We'll find out in a few days how to properly pronounce all these names.
Either way, Bistan is a rebel-only 2-point crew card that reads, when attacking at range 1 to 2, you may change one of your hit results into a crit result. So an ability comparable to the Mangler Cannon.
Yes, taking up a crew slot, you're limited on range to just 1 to 2, which is fine. You're usually not even doing damage at range 3 anyway, right?
And now I know what you're all thinking. You're all thinking, all right, I'm finally going to crack out that 10-num B-Wing pilot card again. Throw a B-Wing E2 modification to get the crew slot and put Bistan on my B-Wing 10 num and really force those crits through.
I think I still like Mangler Cannon better on 10.
I still don't like 10 at all. So
yeah, but I just, if I'm playing 10, I want that crit to happen at any range.
So we don't mean to rain on your guys' parade, but I don't think that's the way you want to go with this card because you do have a range limitation there, 1 to 2. And I just don't think that value's there on 10 num right now to, yeah, forcing a crit through is a powerful game effect, but B-Wings go down pretty fast and they're not very maneuverable.
Is this what we needed to make Hawk primary weapons good?
one crit. This is a pretty cheap crew card coming in at 2 points, adding to the Rebels' already expansive selection of cheap, unique crew cards. Carson, where do you see putting this card in on your lists?
Honestly, I don't see putting this card in my list.
I mean, crits are becoming more and more relevant all the time. We have a lot of cards that can force crits through. Mangler Cannon, obviously, is one of them.
But if there was a place, it would be on either the Ghost or the U-Wing ships with multiple crew slots that you really want to run more efficiently and not use too expensive of crews.
I think what's weird about this is just that Rebel restriction. Obviously, coming in this set and being this character, it's restricted to the Rebel faction, but the Rebels just don't have a lot of use for this particular ability, especially with their lack of crew slots on a lot of the most popular ships.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bossk would like this crew, but he's scum, and yeah.
So, I mean, it remains to be seen where Bastan will go. Maybe there's something we're overlooking here, but for now, we'll just put this one on the sideline and wait till we can find a real good use for it. So there was one more card that was actually spoiled by some X-Wing game developers. In an interview with Team Covenant, the X-Wing lead developers spoiled the card Boshek, which is a unique, non-faction-specific crew card coming out in the Quad Jumper expansion.
This card stands out for a few reasons design-wise. It's the first unique character to not be faction-restricted. So you can play the Boshek crew in a Rebel list, a Scum list, or an Imperial list.
And he's actually got a very interesting ability. This card was actually designed by former X-Wing World Champion Paul Heaver. And
three-time former X-Wing World Champion.
I can't forget the three-time. And it's got a very interesting ability. So what this card does is, when a ship you are touching activates, you may look at its chosen maneuver. If you do so, its owner must rotate the dial to an adjacent maneuver. The ship can reveal and execute the maneuver even while stressed. And this comes in at 2 points.
In his past two cards, Paul Heaver has really tried to expand into design space that really hasn't been explored. And this card is just another example of that. I really think they should probably hire him on full time. He makes some pretty cool cards. The mind games you can play with Boshek is just crazy.
Well, and suddenly you have to start considering things in the game that you never had to consider before. Like, oh, I'm touching this ship, I'm setting a maneuver. Well, wait, what maneuvers are adjacent to this? Suddenly, I really want to take that K-turn, but if I don't have any other turnaround maneuvers adjacent to that K-turn, suddenly I'm forced to turn away and lose out on a shot or bump and lose out on an action.
Right, and this becomes even more critical where, oh, I really need to execute this green maneuver, and the maneuver one over is not going to be the color I need.
Well, and even if it's a red maneuver, you're still allowed to perform it, but that means you're still going to take that stress token. Whereas regarding where we're going to put this card, I mean, there's a lot of different places you could put it. Anything with a crew slot and a decent dial could be a pretty effective blocker using the Boshek crew card to really screw with your opponent's maneuvers.
I mean, it comes with the quad jumper, and I think that's a pretty good place to put it. I mean, Unkar Plutt already wants to be bumping other ships to get those tractor beam tokens out. So now you just get another reason to get value out of bumping your opponent's ships.
Well, another thing that's interesting about this ability is it's not limited to once or twice per round. It's just whenever a ship you're touching activates. So if you throw this on a big base ship to block with, and you've got two or three ships touching you, you get to trigger this ability each time, which for 2 points could be game-changing.
Absolutely. Oiken is already getting value out of bumping other ships, dealing a damage. Now here's just another control effect. Maybe throw Mara Jade on top of there. Okay, they're stressed. They got to clear that stress. What maneuvers are they going to take? You're already limiting their dial. And now Boshek provides another limitation to their dial already.
Yeah, and I like that too. Since Oikun comes on a Decimator, that's already a pretty good ship for blocking, especially if you throw an engine upgrade on there. And he's still got the turret weapon, so you're still able to take shots at anyone that you haven't bumped into. I mean, a lot of versatility here to be seen with Boshek. I mean, obviously there's the inherent limitation that your opponent is still choosing the maneuver they have to change to.
So it's a game played by both players here. So if we're already touching when we're setting maneuver dials, you would have to choose, okay, what maneuver do I set where I'm going to be turned left or right one? I have that option. But I might not choose to activate Boshek, meaning you could be stuck with whatever maneuver you dial in.
And there, I mean, the levels of mind games here are crazy too. If you put Boshek on a low pilot skill ship and you end your round touching each other, your opponent now has to gauge, well, is he going to perform a maneuver to maintain the bump, just overlap me again and stay bumped? Or is he going to clear me and then suddenly, yeah, I'm stuck with this maneuver I chose anticipating that Boshek was going to trigger.
Right, and the U-Wing has pretty fast speed maneuvers. You got the white 3-bank and a 4-forward. If you put Boshek on that, you could move pretty far, bump another ship before they activate, and they weren't even anticipating you would Boshek them. I'm just going to make that a verb. And you could really mess with somebody's dial that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much potential on this card. I'm certain we're going to see it start to get used. It's so cheap, 2 points. It's cross-faction, so it can fit in any different kind of list from any kind of faction.
It feels fun, but maybe it will just hurt too bad when it happens to you that it won't be fun anymore.
Who knows? Maybe that ship, even with low attack dice, will become a priority just because you can't stand to have Boshek out there.
Don't want
to
get Boshekled.
A really interesting design from Paul Heaver. I'm really excited to see how this card shapes up on the battlefield. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break from the show to announce our December Patreon raffle winners.
Get hyped!
So this month, we're giving away a Harrison Dula alt art card from the first 2016 regional season.
And then also a Han Solo Worlds 2015 promo card.
So without further ado, here are our two winners. First up, winning the Harrison Dula alt art promo is Adam Sitnick. Adam Sitnick, you have won the Harrison Dula alt art promo. Congratulations.
Adam, you'll have to check back to some of our earlier episodes where Tim talks about how awesome Hera is and his ideal build for her.
I still love that Harrison Dula build with Nien Num. Oh, it's just so much fun. Then winning the Han Solo Worlds 2015 promo is Matt Knott.
Matt, I think you got to try out the expertise Han Solo.
Yeah, this card is suddenly very relevant, I think. So hopefully we can start seeing more Han Solo builds out on the table. So a big congratulations to Adam and Matt for winning this month's raffle. And to all our patrons out there, thank you guys so much for supporting the show.
If you'd like to support the show, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx. We really appreciate it, and it means a lot to the cast.
And in next week's episode, we will be announcing our January raffle prizes. So if you're not convinced about becoming a patron yet, just tune in next week to hear what cool stuff we're giving away.
All right, let's get back to the show.
So in anticipation of the new Rogue One movie and these two new expansions, the U-Wing and the TIE Striker, Carson and I did start brainstorming some list ideas about how we could incorporate these ships into existing archetypes and also new list archetypes. So Carson, what did you come up with?
Well, my list is just full of flavor fails, but it does incorporate a U-Wing. So I got a Blue Squadron Pathfinder with Jyn Erso, Jan Ors.
Who are kind of the same character, I guess. They both steal Death Star plans, I presume. No, yeah. Spoiler alert, I guess.
It depends on which Star Wars canon universe you choose to live in, the current one or the past pre-Disney.
The current official canon one or the good one, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, a pivot wing with the Blue Squadron Pathfinder coming at 27 points. And then I have two ace ships. Jake Farrell, standard loadout at 33 points with Veteran Instincts, Proton Rockets, A-Wing Test Pilot, Auto Thrusters, and Push the Limit. And Poe Dameron, the Pilot Skill 8 version, coming in at 40 points with Veteran Instincts, putting him at Pilot Skill 10, R2-D2, Sensor Clusters, and Auto Thrusters.
So kind of partway in between a budget Poe and the full-on Ace Poe that we're seeing, coming in at a nice 40-point total.
Yeah, I couldn't fit anything more. This comes in at 100 points.
So Carson, what is appealing to you about this particular combination of ships?
Well, I was trying to come up with the Rebel Aces with support ship. The U-Wing is designed pretty comparable to the Lambda Shuttle, which we've seen made popularized with Emperor Palpatine being a massive support ship to usually two, sometimes three ace ships. So I was trying the Rebel version out on that archetype. Jyn Erso is an impressive support ability, being able to deal out potentially three focus tokens to a friendly ship. Jake and Poe both enjoy plenty of extra focus tokens. And with Jan Ors, you can also give them an evade token as part of that pile of focus tokens.
Well, and looking particularly at the crew choice of Jyn Erso, being able to pass out those focus tokens, you've got a lot of versatility in this list, which I like. I've seen before with Kyle Katarn on a Hawk or Garvin Drazen in an X-Wing being able to pass a focus token to Jake. Jake immediately be able to trigger his pilot ability where he gets a free booster barrel roll. This can really catch people off guard if they're not expecting you to do that or pass the token to it.
With Jyn, though, You're not doing it at the start of combat. You're doing it when your U-Wing activates. But you could use that free boost or barrel roll with Jake to potentially block somebody.
Well, and this also opens up some offensive potential for your Poe Dameron, where now you don't have to depend on him taking the focus. You can have Jyn Erso pass him a focus token or a couple of focus tokens so he can use his pilot ability or even spend one or two if he needs to. And then he can take like a target lock. So he's really getting a nice punch with his offense there, which is sometimes an area where Poe can struggle if you're just not rolling those hit results.
Absolutely. And Poe with sensor cluster can now really utilize multiple focus tokens in one turn. Okay, double blanks, auto thruster, sensor cluster, maybe an evade token, get me out of trouble. Oh no, another attack, double blanks, same thing. Auto thruster, sensor cluster, get out of trouble, right? Take one damage, regen next turn with R2-D2.
It's a powerful combination and one that clearly you're trying to exploit to its fullest potential.
Yeah, is this as good as your traditional palpaces? I don't know.
Well, I think a big struggle you have here is that you don't really have a lot of good offensive potential on your U-Wing. It's a little more mobile than a Palpatine shuttle, which is nice, that you're able to actually use some hard turns and flip that ship around or use the title to flip the ship around.
I know. I would have liked to fit fire control system in there, but I just couldn't squeeze the points.
Yeah, so basically you're depending on three naked dice for damage output from that particular ship, which puts all the burden of dealing damage to your Jake Farrell and his proton rockets and then to your Poe Dameron, which could cause some trouble if those hits are just not coming up.
Yeah, you could drop auto thrusters for integrated astromech, but with twin laser turret Y-wings around, I just gotta have those auto thrusters.
And I'm still really liking the value you get out of the U-Wing. It's just hard for me to find that perfect spot for it. The build I really want to try, and we've talked about this, Carson, is the Blue Squadron Pathfinder loaded out with Fire Control System and Gunner, two upgrade cards that synergize well with each other, along with the Harrison Dula crew, allowing you to perform red maneuvers even while you're stressed. This comes in at 31 points, and what I love about this is since you have that zero stop maneuver on the U-Wing, you could just basically set your ship up somewhere, plant it, and just keep performing those zero stops. Get a stack of stress, but you still have your attack, gunner, and fire control system to kind of set up a range of death against an otherwise pretty sturdy ship with two agility dice when you've got the attack mode on your pivot wing title and 8 total hit points.
Yeah, so with Hera, you can just keep repeatedly taking that red maneuver, so you can take the zero stop over and over again and just basically choose, okay, here's now where I want to fortress. I am no longer going to move until I need to, then we're fine.
And at 31 points, I feel like it's not too crazy expensive, and it's got some pretty reliable offense. With two agility dice, assuming you have that title in the attack mode, you're probably going to be able to take a fair number of shots so that the rest of your list can clean up. The real question is, what is the rest of that list? And I'm not even sure yet.
Yeah, it's a good ship. Hopefully it can find a place.
Looking at the TIE Striker, this one's been a little tricky to figure out its place. We still don't know the exact point costs of the middle two generics.
Just close your eyes, pretend turrets don't exist, and the TIE Striker will be fine.
Well, that's the other problem, of course, is that twin laser turrets and any kind of primary weapon turret can really wreak havoc on these ships just because they can't take auto thrusters, and they've only got two agility dice.
I mean, lightweight frame does help, giving it an extra agility if the attacker isn't rolling equal to or less attack dice than you, which, let's be real, basically everyone's rolling 3 or 4 or 5 attack dice at this point anyways.
And while we have some really cool pilot abilities, and of course we've got the adaptive ailerons giving these ships a lot of mobility, I feel like a lot of the named pilots, after you throw a couple upgrades on them, are floating around the 25 to 28 point range, which begs the question, why would I be flying this ship instead of, say, a lockdown Omega Leader with Juke and Comm Relay?
Well, you shouldn't. Omega Leader is just better.
It is. It's a stronger ship right now from what we can tell. Compared to the available TIE Striker pilots, Omega Leader seems like the clear winner there, coming in at just 26 points with Juke and Comm Relay.
But Strikers are definitely more mobile, so against a fair arc list, they will be able to outposition and hopefully not take many shots back.
Well, so the list I came up with was kind of a take on the budget Aces variant, where we used to see a Palpatine shuttle combined with the Wampa TIE fighter, an Omega Leader, and a 31-point Inquisitor. I've shaken that up a little bit by including Duchess instead of the Inquisitor, which I'm not even sure is a great call there, but just to try it out, Duchess loaded out with Lone Wolf adaptive ailerons in the lightweight frame. So you've got that additional agility die. You've got the Lone Wolf title. So if you're not within range 1 to 2 of an ally, you're getting rerolls on offense and defense. And this comes in at just 27 points.
Yeah, and Lone Wolf does give you that defensive modification that the striker does need. So there's that.
And of course, you've got the Palpatine shuttle there to fill in the gaps. And then, of course, Wampa's got a nasty ability where when you roll a crit, you can cancel your crit result to just deal a face down damage card to the defender. And of course, Omega Leader, like we've said, is still a really cool ship and really hard to beat at the end game where it's just 1v1.
And you had Holer Shield on Omega Leader, right?
Yeah, so instead of the normal variant where you wouldn't have that modification option, I'm able to fit a shield upgrade on Omega Leader, which seems like a strong choice right now.
Which is that difference between the 31-point Inquisitor and the 27-point Duchess, right?
Right. And again, I'm just throwing this out there. Inquisitor at 31 points is a really hard value to beat, and I'm not sure Duchess can outclass that ship, even at a cheaper point cost.
Well, if you want to take Omega Leader, right now I think that Holer Shield upgrade is sort of a must, because when you're playing against ships like Dengar or like an Alpha Bossk list, if you didn't get that target locked down or they took it away with countermeasures, Omega Leader's not surviving that first shot many times. So either you need a way to get that target lock on or just get enough hit points where you can survive that one turn and then turn off their modifications.
Definitely. Agreed. So these are just some of our thoughts on the Ewing and the TIE Striker. The one last thing we did want to talk about with regards to lightweight frame. In last week's episode, we were going over all the available ships that could actually take that modification.
Apparently, there's a ship called the TIE SF that we forgot existed.
And honestly, we completely forgot it was out there. It has not really been on our radar ever since its release. We've talked about this in the show. It's really hard for us to find a place for that. We are looking at the lightweight frame as an option there to increase its agility value. But still, I'm having a really hard time finding a build I like that's point cost effective.
Yeah, they end up coming in about the same cost as a defender. And then you really have to look yourself in the mirror and say, am I going to take a TIE SF or a TIE defender?
Yeah, free evades, that's really hard to beat.
But they do have a missile slot. You know that?
I see they've been so off my radar, I didn't even realize that.
You got sensor, missile, tech, some of them have EPTs, not bad.
I feel like this is one of those cases where we're going to say, man, there's just no good build to be found on the TIE SF, and then in the next couple regionals, they're just going to...
Well, that's what we said, that's why we forgot about it.
Right? So who knows? Maybe this will be the thing that really unlocks the potential of the TIE SF. I guess that remains to be seen. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you enjoy the show and want to stay up to date on the show and X-Wing news, please like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Radio TCX.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why other players might be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx.
We'll be announcing our January raffle prizes next week, so stay tuned for that.
And we wish you all a very happy Rogue One weekend.
Yeah, guys, go out and see the movie. We're excited to see it, and I bet you guys are too.
And if you're not a Star Wars fan, why do you listen to the podcast?
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great week. It's a